in the second session of the second year. This is, I guess, volume two, number two, of the From the Dayan's Desk series. And last week, we spoke about, not everybody was here, so I'll give a little brief thumbnail sketch review. We spoke about what are the different problems when a person is fired as an employee of a job. I mentioned that many of the Dinei Torah that we have in the Beis Din revolve around people who have been fired from a job. That the person who's fired brings an action against the employer and says, I'm owed wages. Why are they owed wages? I'm owed money. I'm owed damages. What are the wages and the money and the damages? Where does it all come from? So I mentioned that there are different claims that are brought in the context of this type of a Din Torah. So one type of a claim is, do you ever have the right to terminate an employee without cause? In other words, can an employer say, I hired this person, maybe it was a teacher, maybe it was a factory worker, maybe it was an office staff member, I hired this person, maybe it was a vice president, I hired this person, right? Vice presidents we know are very expendable. So I hired this person for you were working in a law firm and you got promoted to a partner, so you had a certain amount of job security. But my friends who went to other firms and they became vice president, like the first day, they're assistant vice president, associate vice president, those are the most precarious jobs that you could possibly have. They get cut, you know, left and right. So anyway, if a person is hired for a particular term, can the employer say at the expiration of the term, I'm not going to rehire you? Or do they have to give a reason? Does it have to be termination for cause? So we brought last week, we brought a machlokas between Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Chazon Ish. Rav Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion that whenever you undertake that you're going to hire somebody for a particular position, as long as the position is still needed, as long as the work needs to get done, like you need a secretary. So you hire somebody to be a secretary, you basically are stuck for life. You've hired that person, as long as you need secretarial work to be done, unless the person commits some sort of a flagrant offense or does the job very, very poorly, and you can demonstrate that the person is being terminated for cause, you're not allowed to terminate without cause. Says Rav Moshe, he brings various rayas from left field. He brings some left field from a Gemara in Gittin that seems to indicate, at least the way that it's understood by the Rashba, that if you undertake that you're going to be mechayev yourself, the Gemara there talks about somebody's mechayev himself, that he's mechayev his wife. He's mechayev his wife that that he's going to support his wife up until she nurses the child, or she has to nurse a child. So then it has to be up until the fullest amount of time that a child needs to be nursed, which is how long? Which is 2 years, right? Which is 2 years. The case there was 2 years. You say that, generally speaking, it's assumed to be 2 years that a child needs to be nursed. When if a man says, this is your get on condition that you nurse my child, so the Gemara indicates it has to be for 2 years. And the Rashba says, similarly, if you undertake that you're going to just support anybody, so how long does the person need to be supported? Forever. So therefore, you have to support the person forever. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said, so certainly, even those who disagree in that context would agree that if you're hiring somebody and you are not just gratuitously giving out money to the person, but you need the work that the person's doing, so for sure it's meant to be forever. So that was Rav Moshe Feinstein's position. And he also brought a raya from a Gemara in Bava Metzia that indicates that when you have certain types of workers, if you have a doctor and you have a bloodletter and you have a sofer, you have a gardener, all of these different types of positions, only if they commit, say that the lohadah, they commit some type of irreparable damage in terms of their job performance, only then are you allowed to terminate them. The Gemara doesn't seem to allow for termination unless it is for cause, so that's the position of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Yes?
Are you obligated to give a warning?
Are you obligated to give a warning? So according to Rav Moshe, there's nothing to discuss. You can't fire them anyway. You mean if they committed a breach that was a term that would constitute termination for cause? So there, the Gemara said that all of these types of public positions are considered to be kemusarim ve'omdinenu. They're considered to be forewarned because it's understood they do something which is going to be very damaging. It's going to cause tremendous harm, so you don't have to give a warning. And the implication would be: so if it's not a public position, you have to give a warning, but you're still you would be allowed to terminate them for cause. However, if it was not for cause, says Rav Moshe, you wouldn't be allowed to terminate them. The Chazon Ish disagrees. The Chazon Ish says that's only if that was the minhag, that the minhag was that you couldn't terminate a person unless it was for cause. But if the minhag is that you live in a place, you live in a business environment, in which people are hired for set terms. When the term ends, you don't have to exit. You don't have to rehire them. You don't have to pick up their contract. So then you would be allowed not to rehire them, even if there is no cause. Everybody seems to agree that if it's within the term, then within the term you can only terminate somebody for cause. But let's say, according to the Chazon Ish, you had an employee at will, and it was stipulated up front that the term is there's no such thing as the term. The term is every second is a new term. So it's an employee at will. So you're allowed to terminate them at any time. So according to the Chazon Ish, if that's the minhag, no problem. That would be perfectly permissible. So that's the territory that we more or less covered last time. Yes.
What about if the position became redundant or financial circumstance changed?
So Ramosha says that if he's talking about like a school setting, let's say that you have a school where you have 20 teachers and you have 200 students and you need one teacher for every 10 students. And then somehow circumstances change and instead of having 200 students, now you only have 100 students. So now instead of needing 20 teachers, you only need to have 10 teachers. So Ramosha says, of course, his whole theory and his whole approach is premised upon the understanding that you're going to need the person, that the secretarial services are still needed, the factory work is still needed, there's still a baby that needs to be nursed. The baby is already 25 years old, even if it wants to be nursed. It's very weird. It's very weird. You don't have to nurse a baby who's 25 years old. Okay? They should go out, they should get a job, and they should find something to do. You don't have to nurse them at that point. So if the services are no longer needed, so at that point, even Ramosha would agree. So Ramosha says, also, who do you fire? You have 20 teachers, and you have to fire 10 of them. So you have to figure out, maybe you fire the most junior ones, and you keep the most senior ones. There's some sort of a system that has to be followed. But of course, he agrees to that as well. That's called, whenever I hire somebody, anybody, for any job, if it turns out that the job is no longer needed, there's some sort of an onus, there's some sort of circumstance beyond my control, and I no longer need a job. So that's a halakha mefereshes in Shulchan Aruch that you can tell the worker, I'm really sorry, but I'm not able to... employ you for the originally intended purpose. However, in the normal course where the position is still needed, let's say you have a shul and you have a rub of a shul. So every shul needs a rub. There are certain shuls that have decided that they don't need a rub anymore. However, generally speaking, it's understood if the board and the members of the shul figure that they need a rub and the rub is doing his job and there's no cause for termination, so then there will be an obligation to continuously renew the contract. When it comes to a rub of a shul, there's already a different consideration that we mentioned, that whenever there's a position of sorora, there's a position of a great communal stature, like being a rov, like being, you know, an abbess and something like that. So, you know, that's supposed to entail greater job security. Okay? May as well throw that in there, you know, for good measure. Because a position of sorora, technically speaking, is supposed to last not only for the entire duration of the person's life or career, but it's supposed to then be passed on to the person's children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. At least that's the way sorora was always understood. So if it's that type of a position that gets passed on for future generations, so certainly it stands to reason that it would last for the duration of the person's functional professional lifetime. However,
the Chazon Ish be maskim in that case too?
The Chazon Ish would be maskim unless the Chazon Ish would say that even in that case, if there is, what's the reason of that we're especially, you know, meticulous when it comes to these more exalted positions? Because of the fact that there would be, number one, we mentioned this last week as well, this is all review, it's all chazara. Mentioned one reason is that it would lead to great upshot, that people would think, oh, why are they getting rid of this person? Maybe they did something wrong, maybe there was something untoward, a corrupt, a scandalous that occurred. So for that reason, that you don't want to create that type of a bad reputation, or that type of a public murmur or rumor, then that is sufficient reason why you should not be allowed to terminate somebody unless it is for cause, if they have that type of position. And number two, another consideration is that whenever you're dealing on the public sphere with people who are entrusted to hire for public positions, so in the Jewish community, when you have like the elders of the community, like the Zion Tuvei Ha'ir, or the board members of the shul, you know, the really distinguished members of the community, so they are supposed to act in a lifnim mishuras hadin fashion. They're supposed to act in a particularly above and beyond letter of the law fashion, so they should be extra nice in terms of not terminating people unless they have a really, really strong and good reason to do so. However, in Akinami, you're absolutely right. If the minhag would be, let's say you're applying the reasoning of the Chazon Ish, the minhag would be that even for these types of positions, it's understood, like that a person, you know, serves in some exalted capacity for 2 years, that it's only a 2-year term, and after the 2-year term, there's somebody else who serves in the 2-year term, so then the person can be terminated at the end of the 2-year term, because that was the deal, that was the expectation, and it does not bring
any kind of shame or disgrace or an injury to reputation when the person steps down after that period of time, because that has been normalized and has been built into the system. So who do we paskin like? Do we paskin like Moshe Fein? Do we paskin like the Chazon Ish? So we're up to source number 8 on page 3. So I want to just move there quickly so we can get started. So source number 8 on page 3 says, we poskim acherim, quotes from Moshe Fein. Then he says, we poskim acherim from the other poskim, we mentioned including the Chazon Ish and the others as well. It really is, the majority position is not like Moshe Feinstein. I mentioned last time that whenever we have an employment termination dispute and the person who is discharged walks into the Bezin, especially if they have a toin, especially if they have a rabbinic advocate, we know the first thing out of the mouth is going to be Moshe. They couldn't fire me because of Moshe. Because Moshe says you're not allowed to fire anybody ever. And therefore, I should be reinstated to my position because of Moshe. So that's the first thing out of the mouth. Says of Yoel Schwartz, full disclosure, mishpacha of mine, but he writes very good svarim. So Yoel Schwartz writes, the poskim acherim near Shalokid Barav, says some other poskim appears not like Moshe Feinstein, who Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael where he lives, Nagu, she'ef shalapatze po, kishmashamin lo pisuyim anhugim. So he throws in a new consideration. He says that the minhag is that you can get rid of a worker. You can get rid of a worker even if it's without cause. The term ended, now you can say goodbye, we're not renewing your contract. However, you pay severance, you pay pitsuyim. Pitsuyim is very, very big in Eretz Yisrael. People live off of pitsuyim in Eretz Yisrael. It's a very, very important concept over there. It is memorialized into statute that when a person is fired, you have to pay a certain amount of pitsuyim, and they came up with this formula of, anybody know what's the formula? Chodesh Lashana. Chodesh Lashana. 1 month for every single year. This is such an important concept to people that they view it as perhaps even higher than halakha l'moshe. You see, everybody knows Chodesh Lashana. It doesn't appear anywhere in the Torah Shebaktav, doesn't appear anywhere in the Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's memorialized into Israeli legislation, and therefore this makes it very, very holy, very sacred. So it was a person who went around a number of years ago. He was writing a sefer that he was appropriately naming Chodesh Lashana, in which he wanted to demonstrate that all the batzi did in the world and all the major poskim in the world are in agreement that whenever a person is discharged, particularly from a clay Kodesh position, they're a teacher, they're a rebbe in a school, they're a rabbi of a shul, they're a communal worker for a Jewish organization, whenever it's a clay Kodesh position, if they are discharged, particularly if it's without cause, then they are entitled to Chodesh Lashana. And what is the major basis for Chodesh Lashana? The major basis of Chodesh Lashana of this person's sefer was because Moshe Feinstein said so. So I have to tell you, Moshe Feinstein did say that you're not supposed to terminate a worker ever unless it's for a cause. However, Moshe does not have, to the best of my knowledge, you're welcome to search, even use Bar-Ilan search engine or whatever else, Moshe does not write anywhere that there is a concept of Chodesh Lashana. However, the whole theme of this book was, well, because Moshe said it, therefore we all have to do it. So that's the whole theme of the book, and everybody bought into it, and they got poskim left and right and up and down to write that, yes, we all recognize this is very important. They approached me too. I was approached by the person who put the sefer together. He approached me, can you please write something for the sefer? So I don't know, I was a little suspicious of the whole enterprise, so I figured maybe he has a din Torah. Maybe he has a din Torah, and he's trying to build a case. He's trying to build a brief, and he's going to quote all these people, and I don't know whether in his case they're entitled to Chodesh Lashana or not. So Chodesh Lashana is kind of like, this side sort of issue, that we can say that maybe there is this halakhic principle that it's appropriate to pay workers pitsuyim. It's appropriate to pay some sort of a severance to workers when you discharge them. Whether it has to be Chodesh Lashana is a totally different story. So today, I walked into Keshe's Dam, and they picked up a sefer for me. I was very excited, because I ordered some various farms. So one sefer came in, and this is the sefer, Yabia Omer Chelek Yud Aleph. Rabbi Yosef Zatzal passed away a few years ago, and he published 10 volumes of the Shalos HaTshuvos Yabia Omer during his lifetime, but now they just came out with an 11th volume, an 11th posthumously published volume of Yabia Omer, which contains many of the tshuvos that he wrote, I guess, the last few years of his life, tshuvos that just never got around to being published. So I looked through it, and I discovered in the Choshen Mishpat section of the Yabia Omer that they had published the letter that, much to my surprise, he had written for this sefer. That they went around to lots and lots of gedolim. They got letters from very eminent people, including our own Rosh Beis Din Gedalia Dov Schwartz. They got from very eminent people. And I read the tshuva of Rabbi Avadya Yosef at the time, and I thought to myself, oh, I can't believe, that he wrote for this too. But he did. And it's published in this sefer. But when I looked very carefully at the tshuva that he wrote, I saw he actually wrote the tshuva in a very nuanced and meticulous fashion. And I don't believe that anywhere in the tshuva, nowhere in the tshuva does he use the words Chodesh Lashana. This person wanted to, be able to demonstrate that there is this requirement of Chodesh Lashana that every single institution has to practice. And they got the tshuva from Rabbi Yosef, but he stayed away from the words Chodesh Lashana. Very, very good. So what he did right is that there is an ethical notion, according to Jewish law, paying some sort of pitzuyim. And he said, you follow whatever the minhag is. So they told him, oh, Rav Moshe Feinstein said that there's a minhag of Chodesh Hashanah. So he writes, v'nei achar shehe adasam, now that you have testified to me, meaning that I'm relying completely on you because I haven't seen this, achar shehe adasam, shehagaon, mofei sador, Moshe Feinstein, horagame atzot avris, mifsok pitzuyim canal, that in atzot avrit, Moshe Feinstein has ruled that there is a requirement of paying a pitzuyim, that there's a certain minhag, and of course this person wanted to claim that the minhag is Chodesh Lishana. So he said, many Bati Din are following this. Havalei minhag kavua. So then that would become a minhag kavua. What is the minhag kavua? So he says that the minhag kavua is that you would have to pay whatever the pitzuyim are, whatever the severance is of the minhag makom. He says, because whenever, even if there is no minhag, this is just a proper and appropriate thing to do, that when a worker leaves, you should pay them pitzuyim. So, what you find in the Sefer Pulas Safir by Rabbi Yosef Schwartz is the beginning of this marriage, or this combining these considerations, the marriage of these considerations, of saying, you know what, it's okay to fire workers, but you should give them a little something in the process. Moshe Shtermach in Krach Gimel, Simen Tov Ayin Daled, has the same idea. He says, look, as far as whether you are allowed to fire a worker in the first place or not, he says, really, we follow the Chazunish. Nowadays, people are only hired for set terms, unless they're, you know, officially tenured or whatever, as the Chazunish writes. And it all follows, whatever's the minhag medina. The minhag medina is that you don't have to renew contracts. You don't have to renew contracts. And it's on that basis that we hire workers. At that time, he was Moshe Shtermach started out. He was a rav in South Africa for many, many years before he became the head of the base in Eidah Haredis in Eretz Yisrael. He says, in South Africa, there is no such statute that a worker who is discharged is allowed to ask for severance pay. And the Balabayas, the employer, can just fire, terminate employment at will. But he says, however, there is kind of like a flip side to the equation, that in those places like South Africa, where you can just fire somebody without giving them any type of severance pay, then you have to have a good reason, a good cause for firing them, so that they won't end up without any sustenance, as it says in the Moshe Shabbos Emor. However, in the place where there is a kind of custom in place where the workers, when they're discharged, do get paid some sort of a severance payment, since that is the final result, that they're going to get paid a severance amount in order that they'll have something to live on, so therefore it ends up that that particular chumrah justifies the more kula, lenient oriented approach of the Chazunish. If you're going to pay them severance, the fatu kishyesh lebarabayis asiba, you can get rid of it, that you can get rid of them. Okay, well, let me continue. He says, he says that the minhag is that you can get rid of the workers even if they did not do anything wrong, if you are in fact paying them, if in fact you're paying them severance. That it's better for the entire community, that if you find a worker who you think is going to be a better worker, you go barido apoli pashia, that you will be able to fire somebody even if it is without cause. That's going to force the worker to work even harder. So therefore, these rights that in the event that you're not, that you're going to pay severance, there's more of a justification to be able to fire somebody even without cause. Okay? Go on to source number 10 over here. Source number 10 over here, he writes, is that, He said that going about four lines down. He says for Apsha Shulchanaraku Poskim Mahuska Pashizel Kiyuba. This business of paying severance pay, where do we find it in the Shulchanaraku? We don't find anywhere that there is some sort of an official obligation to pay severance pay in the Shulchanaraku. He says, nonetheless, we come up with Mishamakim Feminagam and Hidina. Nonetheless, we can do that because that's the minhag of the country. Actually, the entire Iraq, we have an Ivyeshdin Hanaka, despite the fact that when it comes to Eved Ivri, when it comes to when it comes to the Torah, the only time that we have an official halakha of having to pay severance is when you have an Eved Ivri, when you have a servant, a Jewish servant, and after you release them at the end of a 6-year period, so the Torah says, Hanek Taniko So, Yisonachami Ganachami Yikvecha, that you're supposed to give Hanaka, you're supposed to give severance. But that's the only place where we actually have that, okay? So he says, so therefore, this is the basis, but it's not something which is an absolute obligation. Because it is not an absolute obligation, he says, so therefore, Yad HaMavir HaElyona, this is towards the end of the Tshuva, it's Yad HaMavir HaElyona, that we cannot force somebody to keep a worker if they don't want to keep the worker, but it is the appropriate thing to do to pay severance. So where do we find, other than the Ramosha Sternbach, that we can derive from Eved Ivri, that it's an appropriate thing to pay severance? So the Sefer HaChinuch is really the one who came up with it. So he mentions in his discussion of Mitzvah Tafnei Beis about paying an Eved Ivri, he says that nowadays it's not applicable because we don't have avodim. We don't have slaves anymore. But says, well, what does he say? When Kolmakom Apizman is say Yishamachakom Yosef Lekach. But nowadays, we should follow the spirit of the law. That if you hired somebody and they work for you, Zman Ruba, they work for you for a significant period of time. This is important because he doesn't say that this would kick in if you only hired somebody for a year or two. He says a significant period of time. Then he says it's a short period of time or two. Okay. So he says that whether it's a long period of time, even if it's a shorter period of time, but what does he say? He says that you should provide him with some sort of a severance pay. May Asher Barachol Hashem. From that which Hashem had blessed you. Why does he use that terminology, May Asher Barachol Hashem? Anybody know? Because it says with respect to the Eved Ivri, that the Eved Ivri, it says that it's only from what Hashem has blessed you that you have an obligation to give a corresponding amount to the Eved Ivri when he leaves your employ. So since it's all based on the Eved Ivri model, so that's how much we have to give to the worker, how much you have been blessed. So some of the Dayanim have pointed out, he had a Dayan here. He used to live in Chicago. Now I don't know exactly where he lives. Anybody remember his name? Is Rabbi Avram Kivalovitz. He used to live here in Chicago. He served sometimes as a Dayan on Bezdin cases. So he said, when he sat on a severance case, he said that his diuk from the Chinuch is that if the reason we're providing severance is that it's based upon what we do for an Eved Ivri, and when it comes to an Eved Ivri, you only give severance, Mashiach Be'achol Hashem. So if you're working for some type of a company, you're running a company where the company has lost a lot of money, or you are the administrator of a school, and the school is in dire financial straits, so then it's very difficult to be mechayev the school to pay a huge amount of severance if it has not been contractually required or entered into, because the requirement is me'ashir barayachol Hashem. The requirement is based on the bounty that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you. If your business is falling apart, or your school is facing financial ruin, that it can't be that you should make yourself bankrupt in order to pay a severance amount. You pay according to what is affordable under the circumstances, and that is not always going to translate into Chodesh Hashanah. So not everybody necessarily reads it this way. I think in the Sefer Chodesh Hashanah, I don't remember anybody actually saying that, but I thought that this made a lot of sense. I thought that it made a lot of sense. Again, if you contractually require yourself to pay a certain amount, that's a different story. But in many of these cases, there's nothing at all that is written in the contract that requires one thing or another thing. Yes.
So should you have a non-contractual at-will employer? And there's a law in Illinois that says if I terminate somebody, I have to pay them accrued vacation time.
Okay.
Vacation time they accrued, they didn't take the vacation. I got to give them the last check. Unless they have 2 weeks vacation they accrued, I got to give them a check for that.
Okay.
At the time of the last check. But I make the argument to a bank that, look, if I got a 2-week paid vacation, even though he wasn't working there, I don't really have any more money. I'm calling that piece of money. I'd be allowed to do that, even though civil law requires me to pay that.
If the civil law requires you to pay it, so that's already minimum medina. That's Minhag HaMedina. The Minhag HaMedina says that you have to pay accrued vacation time. So even the Chazon Ish would say you do everything according to the Minhag HaMedina. And that's what Rabbi Yosef says true for here as well. He says you follow the Minhag HaMedina when it comes to these matters. So in Eretz Yisrael, the Minhag HaMedina is Kodesh Hashanah.
Can Bezin force someone to give Pitsuyim, or they just recommend it?
So this is very good. So Rabbi Yosef has that if this is basically the Pnim Ashiris HaDin, the Sefer HaChinuch is not saying that this is real halakha. He's saying that the ethical thing that we should do based on this norm and mitzvah that exists in the Torah that's no longer applicable nowadays, is that the ethical thing to do is to give a certain amount of Pitsuyim. So he has a long discussion here in the newly published tshuva in the Yabia Omer, in which he brings down that in the Shulchan Aruch we have a discussion: are you allowed to be kofen al lifnei mishuras hadin? Are you allowed to force somebody to go above and beyond the letter of the law? And the way that it's generally paskin in Shulchan Aruch is that in kofen al lifnei mishuras hadin, that you cannot force somebody to go above and beyond the letter of the law. However, he points out that the box says. Another relative of mine. The box says that when there is like a major communal institution that has lots of funds, that what we would call like an usher, a rich type of institution, and you're a rich type of employer. You're like J.P. Morgan. You're like a rich employer. So then it's always appropriate to compel a rich employer, a rich litigant, to go the Pnim Mishuras HaDin, to go above and beyond the letter of the law when it comes to providing for the other party if the other party is a poor litigant. So therefore he says that in these types of circumstances, when you're dealing with like a communal type of institution, you can take that into consideration. And also remember that the Poskim say that the communal institutions in the Jewish community are always supposed to act with Pnim Mishuras HaDin. They're always supposed to act above and beyond the letter of the law. It's the Gemara in Bava Metzia, which seems to say explicitly that when we're dealing with an Adam Chashuv, when you're dealing with like an important rabbi who hired some workers, the case over there is dealing with a rabbi who hired some workers, that's Rabbi Bava Huna, hired some workers, and the workers messed up. They were carrying some barrels, and they slipped and they fell, and they broke the barrels, so he wanted restitution for the barrels, so he went in front of Rav, and Rav said, I want the workers to pay for the barrels, and Rav said, you shouldn't wake up, make them up, so he grabbed their clothing, and he said, I'm going to hold the clothing as collateral until they pay for the barrels, and Rav said, return the clothing, because it's not nice. So he said, why is that? Said, Laman Telek Mederek Tovim, because you're a good guy, and you should act like a good guy. Laman Telek Mederek Tovim. So then the workers came to him and they said, we want payment for carrying your barrels. You want payment? It's bad enough. You're not paying me for the damage of the barrels. I have to pay you as well. No way I'm not paying you. So he went to Rob and Rob said, you got to pay them. She said, what are you talking about? Dina Ochi, is that the din? So he said, yeah, because we're Ochi Tzadikim this one, because you should act, you should walk in the paths of the Tzadikim because you're such a Tzadik. So a person's a Tzadik, so then we force them to act like a Tzadik. You want to be called a Tzadik and have a reputation of being a Tzadik in the community, you better act like one. So therefore, when it comes to communal institutions, there's more of an argument to say that we might actually compel them to act like Pnim Mishuras HaDin when it comes to making severance payments. I can take that. The Lubavitcher Rebbe actually wrote, I have this, somebody gave me once, I spoke at, you know, every now and then I speak at these conferences for the Lubavitch community. They have like these JLI educational conferences. So the first time I spoke in one of those conferences, they gave me a set of svarim of the halakhic rulings of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Very, very interesting. So in those svarim, I looked, and there was a little section about termination disputes and his halakhic rulings, and he ruled about severance. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe went so far as to say that even if parties expressly stipulate in their contract that there'll be no obligation for the employer to pay severance at the expiration of the employment term if the contract is not renewed, that is a right that cannot be waived. And the severance would have to be paid anyway, and if the minhag is Kodesh Hashanah, then the Kodesh Hashanah would have to be paid anyway. To the best of my knowledge, Lubavitcher Rebbe was the only one who ruled in this particular fashion. Generally speaking, most poskim would probably say that if when you entered into the contract, you stipulated that there won't be any severance, that's something that a Beis Din would take very, very seriously, particularly if you specify what the nature of the severance would be. Meaning that if there's no severance, then a Beis Din might say, wait a second, as an ethical norm, you have to pay some sort of severance. The wise thing for an institution to do is to enter into the contract and say, we're not going to pay Kodesh Hashanah because our minhag is not Kodesh Hashanah, and show me where in the Torah it says Kodesh Hashanah. But we'll give you something. Now, some say that something can be payments into the pension plan. You're going to make additional payments into the pension plan. And say, why are we making these payments into the pension plan? That's intended as your severance in the event that the contract will ever be terminated. That is what you'll be able to walk away with. They can spell that out conceivably, or they can say, we'll file the minigum and we'll give you your accrued vacation day. So they'll give them something, and this way they will be satisfying at least the basic ethical norm that was established by the Sefer Chinuch, as opposed to arguably being masnem ashikos to the Torah, saying that we're not going to follow our ethical requirements of the Torah, where one could potentially make an argument in front of Beis Din that even if that was waived, you had no right to pressure the employee to waive that basic right of the Torah, to waive that basic moral privilege that they should, or that basic ethical norm that they should be entitled to walk away with something. So therefore, if an institution wants to protect itself, it probably should build in some sort of a severance package, even if they don't want to have to pay Chodesh Hashanah. I'm not saying how I would rule on any case that came in front of me. I could have a case that comes in front of me in which parties will have entered into that type of contract saying that we're not obligated to pay Chodesh Hashanah, and I will come to the conclusion that under the circumstances of the case, maybe that clause shouldn't be on it. But I would say that I think that the default proposition would be that one would honor such a clause if it was voluntarily entered into by two parties with equal bargaining power, where they agree that they're not going to provide that particular measure of a severance. I've always been very wary about this notion that there's some Torah requirement of Chodesh Hashanah. However, you could say that there is an ethical norm of the Torah that some sort of severance, you know, would be appropriate. Torah Mesorah, for example, has certain guidelines when it comes to a severance. They have Chodesh Hashanah guidelines. I think their guidelines say that even if a teacher retires, they can be entitled to Chodesh Hashanah. If they're terminated without cause, or they're terminated for cause, but the cause is not like a really terribly egregious case of malfeasance, it's just that they're not really an effective teacher anymore, so they'll still get Chodesh Hashanah. However, even in a case of retirement, they now provide for Chodesh Hashanah if the teacher has worked for at least 35 years, or the teacher in question is at least 65 years old. Now, supposedly, Rav Moshe held the Chodesh Hashanah applies not only to Klei Kodesh, but also to Lei Kodesh. I assume you're familiar with that terminology. Even if the person's not, you know, within the religious sphere, anybody would be inside the Chodesh Hashanah. I can't speak to what Rav Moshe said because I don't have it in front of me. It's just a shmua in the name of Rav Moshe. It's not published anywhere, so I have a lot of difficulty with that. Yes.
So the idea of severance,
if it's retirement, but retirement means they don't take another job.
The person is presented the same with the contract, so they have better defined their job duties.
Yeah.
At that point, is there an obligation for severance?
Well, again, it really depends to a large degree on minhag hamakom, right? You know, minhag hamakom, what is provided under these circumstances? And maybe the minhag hamakom is that it's only when it's termination. The person says that you're offering me a contract, I don't want to continue in this job. Arguably, that's not termination. On the other hand, the person's offered a contract for lesser terms and a significantly less amount of money than they have been receiving beforehand. Where it's a materially a lower amount of money. So one could argue, potentially, that's considered like constructive termination. Constructive termination would bring up all of these issues of severance. If a person has faithfully served the community in a particular job, in a particular capacity, it certainly is nice to give them something as a go-away gift. What we've done in the Beis Din over the years, we've had certain cases where we said, you absolutely have to pay something. And we've had cases in which we have said that you don't absolutely have to pay something, but it would be a nice thing to do. But what I discovered is that in those cases where we simply say it's a nice thing to do, they don't do it. So if you really want them to do it, then you really have to write in the arbitration decision that you have to do it. You could say, you have to do it because for all costs, tzaddikim tishmor, because it's a really nice thing, or we think that you're a tzaddik, but you got to write that you have to do it. Okay?
So the day school case where they drop from 200 to 100 students and they have to let 10 teachers go.
Right.
And Stama, they're not rolling in cash at the moment because they lost 100 students per year. Right. Tar Masar contract, they theoretically have to pay
I don't think that in the Tar Masar contract they have a carve-out, per se, for when the institution is in dire straits. This was the Chiddush, I quoted B'Shem Omro of Rabbi Kivalevitz, but I thought it made a lot of sense. I'm not, you know, saying to Pasnak Lay in every single case, but I thought it made a lot of sense. No, in an article that I saw in which they described the Tar Masar guidelines, they quoted various people of saying that an institution would even have to sell its assets in order to be able to, you know, pay off, you know, the Chodesh Lashana. So I thought that was a little extreme. But what they mean is that you should be nice to your Torah teachers. I'm more in favor of being nice to your Torah teachers. So when I left the Beis Din of America, I was the director of the Beis Din of America for 10 years. So we issued a lot of decisions. And one of the things that I was always very proud of proclaiming and announcing, you know, from the rooftops and so forth, is that we never had a single case that was overturned by the civil courts. That's a pretty good thing for any arbitration tribunal, because sometimes people will bring a decision to the arbitration tribunal, they'll say that certain procedural requirements of arbitration law were violated, and therefore the decision should be overturned. Or the decision was one that shocks the conscience and therefore it should be overturned, whatever, you know, reasons or grounds exist. And many, you know, I wouldn't say the majority of cases, but there certainly have been cases of arbitration tribunals, even Batei Din, that have been reversed or overturned by the civil courts over the years. And we've never had, in the Beis Din of America, we never had a single case that was ever overturned. So then, you know, like when you're playing baseball, you're a pitcher and, you know, you pitch and, you know, you leave the game. So you leave the game and you didn't give up any earned runs during the game. So there's nobody on base. You know that you're free and clear. But let's say you leave in the middle of the game and there's somebody on base. So then there's a possibility, even though you're not involved anymore, you still might be charged with an earned run. So I had a left on base. So I had one case which was a left on base in which there was a decision that had been issued by the Beis Din, and then it was challenged. It was challenged after I left the Beis Din, and some judge decided to overturn the decision. What was that case? That case was a case involving a teacher who worked for a school for many years. And that teacher was fired by the school because they felt that the teacher, the Rebbe, was not subscribing to the school's educational philosophy or whatever, you know, the argument was. And the Beis Din came to the conclusion that under all of the circumstances of the case, it was not appropriate for the that Rebbe to have been fired, that there was an effective tenure. Remember, Moshe said there's a higher standard after like 2-3 years when there's a tenure that's been established, and that the presumption is in favor of the Rebbe, that unless the school can really compellingly show that it fired the Rebbe for cause, and that there was not, you know, a sufficient demonstration that there was cause and there was tenure. So therefore, the Beis Din ruled that they had to actually reinstate the Rebbe. And some civil court judge looked at this decision and said, this is outrageous, this is crazy, this is ridiculous, the most incredibly terrible thing I ever read, and therefore overturned the Beis Din's decision. So I felt, oh, this is terrible, I got an earned run. So I had the left on base. But then came along some good lawyers that wrote some good briefs on behalf of the other side that contested the lower court's ruling and went to a higher court, the appellate court. And the appellate court said every single procedural safeguard was followed, and the Beis Din's decision on its face seems perfectly logical, that this person had tenure and didn't do anything which was, you know, on its face terribly wrong, and therefore the original decision of the Beis Din shall be upheld. So now I can still proclaim from the rooftops that we never had a single case that was ever overturned ultimately from the Beis Din of America. But that was the case. So, but you have to, you know, these are sometimes very, very emotionally charged litigations. Yes.
In your reactions, is that still holding?
Yes, it is still holding. Leah Nora. Okay, yes. Baruch Hashem.
In the teacher case, you know, where you've got 100 students, not 200.
Yeah.
Could you set up a standard of quality of teaching, or would that involve shame for the teachers that are not held on, are not retained?
Of course you can develop standards. And we say with teachers, if they do a lousy job, so that's the Gemara says, that they're considered to be forewarned, that you can get rid of them, you know, at any time. Certainly when it comes to the expiration of their term, you can get rid of them and not rehire, as long as you show that they're not doing a good job. The question is, what is considered to be a sufficient showing that it's not a good job, okay? By the way, I'm just going back for a second in the Tshuvas Manhagos that we had in Source 9. So he said something which seemed to be like the opposite of what I thought he said, but now I realize he said what I thought he said. So in the when he says that in those places where they do pay pitsuyim, he says, "Bachein b'zem makilin imachein mashamim pitsuyim kahogin," that we're more mako to allow termination without cause. Lepatro kishiyesh labalabayas siba. So siba sounds like cause, but it doesn't really mean cause. It means that the balabayas has some reason of his own that he does not not want to continue hiring this person, even though the person didn't do anything wrong. So the word sibo looks like cause, but it's not cause in terms of what we mean when we say for cause. It means that, yes, you know, the person didn't do anything wrong. They just, you know, don't want to continue this person's employ. So that would be more permissible in the event that pitsuyim, that severance payments are made. Okay, now, yes.
In concept, that would be a direct contradiction
to Moshe. That would be.
Moshe seems to take the employer's will out of it.
It's a complete contradiction to Moshe. My point is at the beginning that most poskim don't hold like Moshe. Most poskim don't hold like Moshe. Nonetheless, he's Moshe, so we have to factor him into the discussion. What Moshe actually said in his two words, we certainly have to take seriously. What he's just quoted as saying, I'll take seriously too, especially if his son's quoting him along those lines. But Lemaise, I don't necessarily have to feel as bound by it if it's not published in his scar. Now, in the look at source number 12. The next type of course of action that gets brought in the Beis Din runs like this: that maybe there was a termination, maybe there was sufficient cause, maybe there wasn't sufficient cause, but was there sufficient notice? So says the Chazon Ish. If you look at the Gemara and Bava Metzia, Mishnah Gemara and Bava Metzia, that put out from the Beis, it talks about landlord-tenant relations. Landlord-tenant relations. It says that if a person has a tenancy for a year, so it's an expectation that at the end of the year they'll probably renew their tenancy, and the landlord will continue to have income and so forth. Let's say the tenant decides that they do not want to renew the tenancy, so then they have to inform the landlord 30 days before the end of the tenancy so that the landlord can find somebody else. Let's say the landlord doesn't want to renew the term of the tenant. The tenant's sort of counting on being able to stay in this place. He's not looking around at an alternative place to live. So then the landlord has to inform the tenant 30 days before the end of the lease that they're intending to terminate the lease and not renew their term. So says the Chazon Ish, if this is true, and if it's not done, so then the person has the right to insist on staying for another year. So says the Chazon Ish, just as this is true in the landlord-tenant context, this is also true with respect to any type of hiring situation. Where if a person is hired, it is understood that they are entitled not only to the time of the job, but the time that it takes to look for another job, and therefore they have to be informed with enough sufficient notice before an employer decides not to renew the contract, that the employer is not intending to renew the contract, so that the person can look around for another job. If they do not give notice within that reasonable period that it would take to look for another job, so then there's a claim that can be made that the employer has already obligated themselves to wages for the following year. Now, would they be obligated to full wages for the following year? It's the whole machlokes. Technically speaking, the employee is entitled to Ska Batola. They're entitled to the amount of wages they're not going to be working that a person would be willing to accept, that they can sit home all day and watch TV and not have to go to work, okay? But presumably they would be happier if they'd be able to make more money and go to work. On the other hand, you know, there's a certain amount of money. They'll say, okay, if I don't have to go to work, I won't go to work if you'll pay me the following amount of money. That's called Ska Batola, okay? Ska Batola. So what is the amount of Ska Batola? Some say for a Torah teacher, Ska Batola is 100% of the salary. Because a Torah teacher can't bear the idea of not having the Chut Shel Chesed, of not being totally immersed in the learning of Torah every single moment that they can do it. And when they dedicated their life to teaching Torah, that's all they want to do. And they're in extreme pain and agony. You put like a newspaper, a text, a website, a blog in front of them, they can't take it. All they want to do is teach Torah. So therefore, if you're depriving them of the ability to teach Torah, and you didn't give them sufficient notice, they can find another job, you got to pay them full wages. We had a case in the Beis Din where a person was brought to be a major religious leader in a community, and they were hired for a 3-year contract, and after like a couple of months they decided that it's not working out, and the person said that they had already moved to a different continent in order to take this job, and they had turned their entire lives topsy-turvy, and now they don't have another job over there, and they're already invested, they have to stay there for that period of time, and the Beis Din ruled that this institution was obligated to pay their full wages for the entire 3-year term. That's a possible outcome based on the circumstances of the case. So, you know, these things can happen. Yes.
That's full wages until he finds a new job? If he finds a new job.
If he finds a new job, then it would just be the difference. It would just be the difference at that point in time. Right, that's correct. That's correct. He finds a new job, and he does have an affirmative obligation to try to find another job, you know, to the best of his ability. Absolutely. Okay? So, says the Chazon Ish, let's read it inside. I think it might be a couple of typos because it's not on the Bar Ilan CD ROM, so I get to type it myself. Oh, Nira, to be the Fiat Nogam, welcome Yishalak Zaman, and some welcome Aboda. That if there is within the confines of that region or that job, or that industry, it takes a certain amount of time to find another job, right? So then it is understood that the person still has to be retained for the period of time that they will need to go searching and looking for another job. Miyom shehodio, another type of shiur kozer, from the time, the day in which the employer says that he is not going to be renewing the contract, you have to establish a reasonable amount of a time, a reasonable amount of notice to give the employee sufficient time to look for another job. So a lot of the schools, for example, when they make a determination whether or not to renew a contract of a teacher for another year, so they have rules. They have, like, in the official, you know, handbooks, the official faculty handbooks, they have rules that say that they will have to give notice to a teacher no later than, say, March 1st or April 1st, that they're not renewing a contract. So the teacher will have 3-4 months to go looking for another job. And if they wait and they don't inform the teacher until June 30th or something like that, and the teacher didn't do anything wrong, and it's not, you know, for cause, like, let's say the teacher was doing everything fine, and then they did something so hideous on June 29th that they had to be fired, so that's a different story. But otherwise, if really the termination could have taken place earlier, but just did not take place earlier because of the negligence of the on the part of the employer, then the employer could be liable to have to pay wages for the following year as well, either in terms of full wages or the compromise that the Taz made when it comes to Schar B'Tol. This is generally followed when it comes to Schar B'Tol cases. I gave you extreme examples where full wages were awarded. The Taz's compromise is you pay 50%. The Schar B'Tol is always 50% of whatever the wages would be, but 50% could also be substantial. Teacher was paid $50,000, sufficient notice wasn't given, so the Bezdin could rule because sufficient notice wasn't given, even if they had the right to terminate the teacher. Even if they had the right because there was cause or they didn't need cause to terminate the teacher, they could still be on the hook. Even if it would be the Taz's opinion that would be filed, they could still be on the hook for $25,000 for half the teacher's wages for the following year. Yes?
Situation, and I think a similar situation that arose in Chicago a few years ago. Institution has been hiring back all its teachers after whatever the deadline is, March 1st or April 1st. They find out that the source of funding they are using to pay those teachers, the bottle buses, endowing these salaries, had a downturn, had a business change, they're not going to be able to continue for the next academic year. School doesn't find out until May or June. They don't have the money in their budget. They've got to let two teachers go.
Again, that's a totally different story. That's an onus. It's an onus if the school would not have been able to anticipate the onus, okay? That's a type of circumstance beyond their control. So then they're not held responsible for it. The only time they would be held responsible, you know, we have four possible scenarios. They couldn't have anticipated it, and the employee couldn't have anticipated it. They're not in law. They could have anticipated it, and the employee could have anticipated it, so everybody knew that it could happen. They're also not in law. The employee knew that this could happen, and they didn't realize it could happen. They're also not in law. The only time they're on the hook is when they knew this was an impossibility, but the employee really could not have been expected to know that this was a possibility. So then we said that they would be on the hook. Yes, Marshall.
The ATT's general policy on the TTA board for many years was April 15th, that's hire your firework. One of the schools to avoid paying severance and going to long-term contracts was to fire their teachers right before they got to severance. And then they would rehire them as new independent teachers.
You know, that I don't understand at all, because then you have to, I would say, rewrite the rules. Like, whenever you can do something that's so outrageously against the spirit of the rules, I'd say just rewrite the rules. Like, you know, that doesn't, right, it doesn't, that just, I don't want to say one way or another where it's done or wasn't done. I'm just saying, like, that doesn't, on its face, on the surface, make sense to me, but I don't want to judge anybody on their presence. That sounds a little bit peculiar to me. However, it is very important that whatever the protocols and guidelines are, that they be very carefully followed. So if, for example, a school establishes the protocols, we're going to give the sufficient notice period, but the notice has to be in writing. I can't tell you how many times I've had Dinei Torah where the argument was, yes, you know, notice was given, but it wasn't given in writing. You know, there was just a conversation because the administrator felt it would be too harsh to have a letter putting it in writing. So they just had a conversation. So they thought they were being very, very nice, but then they get hit with the Dinei Torah afterwards, and the teacher says, hey, it says over here, you have to give me notice in writing. What do you mean? I gave you notice. You didn't put it in writing. You know, and so it's very important. If you have written protocols, you should follow those written protocols. Yeah.
Everything in writing, the lawyers, they were
nice. Excellent, very good. Happy to hear that. So since we're talking about the integrity of keeping deadlines, we have a deadline at 8:45, so let's keep it. We'll stop here. 9:45.
Who knows what's happening as the teachers all get their big stuff over.